Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This program is made possible by the support of the members of the show. For details or to sign up, visit the membership tab at bestoftheleft.com. Now, welcome to the award-winning Best of the Left podcast with clips today from the BBC News Quiz, The Young Turks, The Jimmy Dore Show, The Progressive, Real Time with Bill Maher, On the Media, Media Matters, Counterspin, The Colbert Report, and The Bugle, with a bonus video clip for our iPhone app users from The Young Turks.
Whose plea of self-defense has been attacked around the world?
Oh, it hasn't been the most cheerful week for news. We're talking about Gaza, which has been blockaded by Israel and up until a couple of days ago, Egypt, denying it most of its basic needs. And so a bunch of activists from 32 countries and about 40 different organizations got together a flotilla of ships to take stuff through. And Israel opposes this because they say, we need to search all this stuff, make sure it's not weapons, despite the fact that the Turkish have already searched it all. Israeli commandos decide to storm the ships in international waters, which is of very dubious legality. You see, from the outset, the activists said, look, we have a political motive in doing this. Yes, these supplies are needed, but more importantly, we want to defy the blockade and draw attention to it so that it will be lifted. And the Israelis said, this is a political motive. They just want to defy the blockade. And the activists said, yeah, that's what we just said. And the Israelis said, yeah, well, we're just saying anyway. And the Israelis said, well, no trouble. We will take the supplies in ourselves. But they now say they are not taking in any of the building materials into Gaza. So none of the cement has been allowed in, which gives me the opportunity to accuse the Israelis of being anti-Semitic.
This is, I would have thought, not the first time that Jeremy has expressed a complex ambivalence on the issue.
Everyone's talking about sanctions and stuff, but I had a choice. I went into the supermarket the other day and I saw avocados. It was avocados from Israel and avocados from South Africa. And I bought the South African ones. I was like, boy, times have changed.
None of our political leaders have actually been any good at all on this. From Obama, Cameron, Haig, they all said, we deplore the loss of life. Well, that's a bold statement, isn't it? To be broadly against death in principle.
Jeremy, nobody really knows what the UK government position is because it is impossible to listen to William Haig and stay conscious.
Cameron did say that he counted himself as a friend of Israel. I don't know if Israel is a friend of his. Maybe they're just Facebook friends.
Sandy, I was starting to get a bit worried because last time I was invited on this show, couple days later, Mossad went to Dubai and killed that Hamas operative. Then I was invited on this show and a couple days later, this stuff happened with a flotilla. So next time you invite me on this show, I'm just going to phone up the Israeli embassy and go, what are you up to? I went over there because my boyfriend's from Israel and I got pulled into a little room and I was questioned by Mossad because I had a Dubai stamp on my passport. And they were like, what, why have you've been to Dubai? And I went, yeah. And they went, why have you been to Dubai? I was like, well, not for the same reason that you guys went. I did see the Gaza Strip. My boyfriend took me down there because he knows how to treat a girl. And... He was asking me what I thought. He kept going, what do you think? What do you think? And I was like, I don't know, because I'm from a community of people that have been displaced many times throughout history. So, I didn't know what to say. I was like, I don't want to say. He goes, what do you think? That's when I realized, I was like, my God, this isn't about Israel and Palestine, all these problems in the Middle East. It's not about Jews and Arabs. It's not even about Mossad and Hamas. I was like, my God, it's all about me.
You're bringing things down to the real truth tonight. The Israeli government has defended the raid on the Gaza flotilla, saying its troops had come under attack as they raided the ships. The attack has been condemned by the Turkish government, Hillary Clinton, William Haig, and the United Nations, while the EU's Middle East envoy for peace has just accepted another job raising capital for a computer company in Silicon Valley. The international community is furious about the attack, especially the Somalis, as Israeli soldiers pushed in front of them to board the boats.
I can see me bound and gagged, dragged behind the clown mobile. You can treat me like a dog if you make me feel what others feel.
There were 679 people on that ship. 50 of them were released, like, for example, a Turkish woman with a one-year-old baby. Wow, out of the goodness of their heart, they let her go after she, cooperated with them. But there are 629 prisoners now. Now, the ship got boarded. We don't know when the shooting began, how it began, when it ended, how many people were killed after they had already surrendered. But the people that are on the ship are now prisoners in Israel, 629 of them. And that they need to, you know, cooperate with the authorities. And one of the reasons they're in prison right now, of course, is because Israel doesn't want the other side of the story coming out. That's 629 eyewitnesses. They want to give CNN their strictly edited IDF tape and say, okay, run this for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, until people stop remembering about this story, and we won't give you the rest of the tape, and we won't give you any of the eyewitnesses. How dare they go be in international waters? They were kidnapped, okay? It was international waters. You kidnapped those people, and you're falsely imprisoning them right now. It's like pirates coming onto a ship and kidnapping them, because they were not in Israeli waters. So, number one, you have to release the prisoners. They have no business being prisoners. You have to release them right away and unconditionally. Okay, now, of course, since the U.S. will never criticize Israel, they won't back that. They say, oh, Israel, when you get around to it, could, you know, however long it takes, could you please let go of the people you kidnapped? I doubt they even said that. I'm sure they didn't say kidnap. They say, oh, I'm sure they were, you know, Muslims and, well, some Europeans too, but who gives a damn? Way to detain those possible terrorists. You do with them as you please. That's the U.S. getting tough on Israel. This is a terrible failure in leadership by Obama. Terrible failure. Because when you do not step in as a friend to Israel and say, you've gone in the wrong direction here, as some of our allies and friends did with the U.S. when we were headed towards the Iraq war, France, Germany, etc., said, don't go there. It's not a good idea for you, let alone Iraq. That's what the kind of friend the U.S. has to be to Israel now. But no, we can't. We bow our heads and say, whatever you want. So one, release the prisoners. Two, release the tapes. You want to be cute, and you want to only release the part of the tape where you show the IDF Marines getting attacked? That's fair. And I told everybody earlier in the program, hey, look, they did get attacked. You can see it on tape. But release what happened earlier, and much more importantly, what happened after. Let me see the shootings. How do I know if you don't release the tape? Maybe they all lay down, as you hear over the loudspeakers, people are laying down on the deck. Maybe you summarily executed them. Maybe you shot them in the head. Let me see that part of the tape. Well, you can't say it didn't happen if you don't show the tape. Release the prisoners, release the tapes. Now, who else in the American media is asking for that? My guess is absolutely zero people. But, you know, I tuned into the coverage as it was happening of CNN and Fox News. Fox News, of course, you know what they were doing. And but CNN as well. The Israeli government says this. Oh, we have a new bulletin. The Israeli government says that. And then the Israeli government says this. Hey, how about somebody else's government? How about, you know, you look into, interview somebody from the Free Gaza movement. Interview somebody from the Turkish government. Interview somebody that thinks, hey, you know what, maybe they shouldn't occupy 1.5 million people and basically imprison them there. How about that? No. Is anybody? And how about if you're a news organization and they send you a minute-long tape of a part of what happened, and that tape does not include the actual killings, where all the people were shot, dozens of people were shot, in ways we don't know. How about you ask them, hey, how about the rest of the tape? No, you didn't think of that? No. Because CNN doesn't do news. They're not news anchors, they're news actors. They get told what to say, and they say it like idiots. Not one of the anchors came on and said, this is only a part of the tape, and God knows what happened in the rest of the tape, but they won't give us the tape. We've asked for it because we're a news organization. You're a propaganda organization. Whoever's feeding you the propaganda, you just put it on there. Like a bunch of fools. Do I have respect for the American media? What a joke. What a joke.
This episode is being sponsored by Audible. They're the world's largest resource for downloadable audio content like books, periodicals, premium podcasts, and more. For a limited time until June 30th, Audible is offering listeners of this show a free audiobook download of your choice. It's a pretty good deal. Simply visit audiblepodcast.com/best. That's audiblepodcast.com/best.
Hello, and we're here with Republican Representative Richard Martin, friend of the show, from Ohio's fighting 19th district. All right. Now, you know what? How do you feel about the flotilla that's been? So now what's going on in Gaza right now is just crazy. You know, everybody understands that they're at war over there with each other. Wow. But what's happening really in effect over in Gaza is the Israelis, and they're with their much more superior militaristic might, have kind of turned the whole Gaza into one big concentration camp.
Yeah.
And so where no one has enough food, water, medical supplies.
Jimmy.
And then there was the flotilla incident where
first of all, you've got to understand that the Israelis, they don't have a voice in the American media the way the Palestinians do.
What?
Yeah.
A lot of people would disagree with you on that.
Well, they're probably Palestinians.
No, I'm Irish.
Jimmy. I've searched the situation, the flotilla situation, extensively, and I went scene by scene through the Steven Seagal movie Under Siege. And the similarities are startling. Both took place at sea. Both were greenlit by Jews. And despite pleas from the world, both had a sequel.
What do you mean? I don't understand the Israeli sequel.
Oh, there's a boat coming from Ireland.
Oh,
right,
that's
now.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
And well, let's hope that goes a little bit better. I mean, this new boat that coming over there. I hope there isn't a violent incident.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's cross our fingers and hope for the best, Jim.
Yes.
You know, I wish there was something we could do. I wish there was a way that we could contact the Israeli government. And
what?
And I wish we had some type of bargaining power with them.
Well, we do.
If we had aid that we could withhold, or military weapons that we could withhold until they obeyed human rights violations, but we're powerless, Jimmy. We're powerless. We don't have a voice.
Well, that's why it's frustrating to talk to you sometimes, Representative Martin, because we do actually give aid to Israel. We give billions of dollars. Yes, you're in Congress. You should know that. And we give military aid, too. Where do you think they get all their fighter jets and bombs and everything?
I never thought about it.
Yeah, U.S. of A, friend. Yeah. U.S. of A.
Israel long ago lost its mind and its soul. That's what occupation does to the occupier. Now we're merely witnessing the violent spasms of the irrational. You cannot attack a humanitarian relief ship in international waters and kill at least 10 people and get away with it. And Israel isn't getting away with it, not this time. Its act of lawless aggression against the Gaza relief ship, which resulted in the deaths of at least 10 civilians, has sparked international outrage. Protests have erupted all over the world. Some of the largest have been in Turkey, where most of the people the flotilla were from. Turkey used to be Israel's best ally in the Muslim world. You can forget about that now. Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan denounced the act as a bloody massacre and as state terrorism. And what did our president say? Virtually nothing, even though there were American citizens aboard the ship that Israel attacked. In a written statement, Obama expressed a deep regret at the loss of life, but he didn't name Israel as the aggressor. In fact, his only specific mention of Israel was to say that it's treating some of the wounded in Israeli hospitals. Now, when armed forces from one of the world's strongest militaries storm a relief ship at gunpoint, it is safe, it is accurate, it is morally necessary to name the aggressor. But somehow, it slipped Obama's mind.
Let's talk about the Jews. Okay. No, Israel, because this was the other big story this week, what happened off the coast of Israel. There's a lot of background that you really need to understand the story, so we won't go all the way back to 1948. But basically, Israel has controlled the Gaza Strip, where about half the population lives. It's a very small part of the Palestinian population put into a very small space. A few years ago, Israel gave up the Gaza Strip and let them elect their own leaders. They elected Hamas, who make no bones about their wish that Israel be destroyed. They are not for a two-state solution. They are for a one-state solution, theirs, and the destruction of Israel. So Israel, maybe understandably, is a little paranoid. So they've blockaded ships coming into Gaza because they were afraid there might be something on those ships that went kablooey. Okay, so food and medicine probably weren't getting in as much as they needed either. No one thinks that the Israeli military handled this situation very well when they landed on that boat a few nights ago, and we've seen a lot of videotape from both sides. We don't know really what happened.
The Israelis have released a tiny bit of videotape.
Okay.
Pure propaganda. So far, the Israelis. Yeah. Well, they have the rest of the tape. They won't let us see it.
Even the majority of Israelis don't think their military handled it well, which is a shame, because when I think of the Israeli military, I think of the raid on Entebbe, I think of Munich, I think of them doing really cool commando shit.
That was the old Israel.
What they did in the war in 2008 was a use of disproportionate force, which has led to a crisis. Now, listen, you can talk about Netanyahu and as the great defender. What they did the other day was inflict more damage on Israel than their enemies. And I think that is telling. And I think when you talk about Gaza, you got to remember that you're talking about the collective imprisonment of civilians. And what needs to come out of this is an end to a blockade which doesn't allow in, according to the Israeli Human Rights Group, coriander, notebook paper. You got 80% of population of Gaza living on international food aid, Bill. This isn't going to get us anywhere.
I think, Bill, if you have to take it back really 2 years. When Obama was elected, I thought this was an amazing opportunity for Israel. You had an American president who really loves Israel and cares about it, who also had for the first time real cred with the Arab world and went to Cairo to say, look, I'm not George Bush anymore. I do want to make a deal. And said to the Israelis, look, just as a goodwill gesture, all we're asking is not withdraw from the West Bank, but just can you just begin with freeze construction? Not end it, freeze it for a period of time. And Netanyahu, Cheney, I knew he said Cheney, same thing, said, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Not an inch. We will give not an inch.
Well,
and once Netanyahu did that, and also before, just after Obama was elected, they strafed Gaza, killing 1,000 people, many of whom civilians, in carpet bombing in a way that was really horrifying for people to watch, burying children in rubble. This is not the Israel I love and believe in. This is an Israel that has gone badly wrong.
And I think everyone understands that. Let me ask a broader question, because I think it was just this week that we passed the $1 trillion mark in how much we have spent on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. One thing you will have to say for Israel, they fight short wars. They don't fight wars the way we do. I mean, I thought we should go after the 9/11 killers the way they went after the Munich guys. Individual targeting. It's not the whole Arab Muslim world we're fighting. You know what? The people who attack us, we will hunt you down and we will kill you individually. We will find you in your hotel room. You'll be shaving and then there'll be a bullet in the back of your head.
Do you think the occupation...
Yeah, I mean,
the occupation and colonization of the West Bank is quick and easy?
I know
I mean, they've been there now since 1967.
And you know, Bill, what's...
Fighting a war they cannot win.
And what's happening in Israel is, I think, those who do support the best qualities of Israel understand that the stalemate is a dead hand on Israel. And those in this country who support Israel understand that the American Jewish establishment of AIPAC does not represent a majority of Americans.
Right.
And the younger generation of American Jews are feeling more and more alienated from an Israel which has lost its soul. So Andrew's point is well taken. In order to support an Israel, and we know what the parameters of a peace process are, 1967 borders, shared Jerusalem.
Right.
You can get there with political will.
Let's not forget that the 1967 borders came about because in 1967 the Arabs fought their third war against the Israelis.
Yes.
But you know, where's
trying to wipe out the
and
state.
Israel is surrounded by people who are, some of them, the most anti-Semitic, disgusting, violent, terrorist entities. Yes, absolutely.
Right.
The idea that Israel doesn't have anything to be afraid of is not true.
If Canada was out for our destruction, I think we would be acting a little differently about Canada.
We wouldn't be occupying it.
But if you wanted to have...
We wouldn't be occupying Canada. We would have...
We might have done a surge into Canada.
If Canada declared that they wanted our destruction from the face of the earth...
But you asked a good question, though.
I mean, I'm just saying it should be put into perspective. Israel is held to a standard no other nation is.
No,
it isn't.
That's just not true.
Are you kidding?
Do you think another country, let's say Turkey, had attacked a flotilla of humanitarian and killed an American citizen with four bullets at close range in its head, do you think the United States president would be saying we have to understand why they killed an American
citizen? Muslims kill more Muslims every day.
This was a separate country. This is an international incident.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about the Taliban was poison gassing girls' schools.
Of course.
That made the news for about 8 seconds.
You know, the whole world is overly militarized. That is a serious...
That's
we
true.
See that. And what you talked about in terms of failure of our occupation in Afghanistan, we got to find a different way to fight terrorism.
I love hearing from listeners who write in to tell me about how this show positively impacts their lives. It reinforces the idea that what I'm doing really may be making a little bit of a difference. What I love even more is that it's the support of the listeners themselves which makes this show possible. If you appreciate the service this show provides, you can make individual donations or become a member and donate $5 a month, or even save a couple of bucks by paying for a year in advance. Member support gives me the time it takes to produce 10 shows per month, and in return, members receive access to bonus audio and video content through members-only raw feeds. For details or to sign up, visit the membership tab at bestoftheleft.com. Thanks so much for your support.
As of Friday, all eyes were on an Irish aid ship heading toward the Gaza Strip. This comes after a confrontation on Monday in which the Israeli Defense Forces boarded a ship sponsored by a Turkish Islamic Aid organization carrying hundreds of activists, an incident that left 9 activists dead and proved to be a PR disaster for Israel despite its efforts at damage control. The activists ensured the clash would get press attention by webcasting live video from the boat soon after the Israeli soldiers boarded. Afterwards, the IDF released its own clips. Their tape included images of activists wielding chairs against the soldiers. The cameras panned over clubs, knives, and slingshots the IDF claimed to have found on board. Without unedited tape from an impartial source, it's hard to tell what happened, but the ready availability of the video kept the story in the news cycle, as both cable and broadcast news ran the images again and again. Brian Stelter covers television and digital media for the New York Times. He says that while the video is confusing, one thing we can say for sure is that both sides display a keen awareness of their audience.
The flotilla of activists had constructed this media campaign in advance where they had basically created a webcast network of live pictures from multiple cameras on the boats, beamed up to the satellite, live on the internet to any TV network that wants it. So they were heading out onto the open sea with a media strategy, you know, from the beginning.
And presumably they didn't have these cameras set up just to film their voyage, because who cares about the voyage, right? So it's in anticipation of some sort of confrontation, we can assume, can we not?
The degree to which they produced this event is notable. Also having spokespeople in other countries, not on the boats, able to be reached by the media at all times, certainly had an impact. On the other side of this, the Israeli Defense Forces had many cameras of their own, cameras on their helicopters, cameras with the soldiers, so they could present their side of the confrontation. Both sides pointed to video clips to try to prove that the other side was the aggressor. I think in this case, it ended up just making everything more murky.
The video is kind of inconclusive because it doesn't really give you context.
Yeah, if we were able to see unedited videos from each of these angles, maybe, and just maybe, we'd have a better sense of what happened and who was the aggressor. And by the way, it only gets worse when they add captions. At one point in the Israeli military videos, they add yellow circles around the weapons that they want you to see.
Some corroborating evidence or illuminating evidence should come from the journalists who were aboard the ship. They were taken into custody.
Right. Al Jazeera had about seven people in this flotilla covering this story, producers, reporters, and cameramen. One was able to be released almost immediately. The others were held for a longer period of time. There were also members of the press from Australia, from Bulgaria, from Turkey. Very little eyewitness reporting got out, though, before the Israeli military moved in and really put a blackout on information here. But one of the sole eyewitness accounts that actually came out, one that was able to be broadcast live, was from an Al Jazeera reporter who was saying that the white flag was being raised by the boat, and still there was live fire going on.
Tens of people, civilians, have been injured. There are still sounds of live fire despite the white flag being raised.
But even that clip was seized upon by people on the web, some bloggers who were trying to suggest that that clip, that one moment in time, that it means that the Israelis were the ones that attacked first. And there was no evidence of that in the actual video.
Isn't it just a Rorschach test for where you stand on Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinians?
I think even when we do have these eyewitness accounts, they get twisted into different forms by the people on all sides of this anyway.
So if this is really about litigating in the court of public opinion, do you think the response to all of the inconclusiveness of the existing images will be for there to be fewer guys with guns and more guys with cameras? I mean, is this going to turn into some sort of Paddy Chayefsky mode of war where there are more videographers than soldiers?
Well, I think we're going to see a gradual increase in the video cameras in these conflicts, no doubt. But I remember an image that really struck me last year during the protests in Iran when we had people with camera phones posting onto YouTube through intermediaries. There was an image of, it may have been Neda, it may have been one of the other activists that was killed. I can't remember, to be
honest. Neda Aga Sultan, the young woman who was shot in the head.
I remember seeing someone laying on the ground, either wounded or killed, and no less than five or six camera phones out circling this person. It certainly humanizes what's happening in a way that still photographs or eyewitness accounts can never do. And I have to think that that has an impact on the public's perception of these conflicts. The danger, obviously, is that if we see these dramatic, almost painful images over and over and again, we get numb to them.
I'm curious, based on what you've seen so far of the video from both sides, do you have any confidence that you know what happened?
I have much less confidence than I did when I first read about it.
first day I knew you were my pet.
Where are we on this? Where's the United States on this? Well, it turns out now we have a interesting analysis of what went down in the Foreign Policy magazine. A guy named Josh Rogan wrote it. He's got a lot of specifics, including quotes that back up what he's saying. Apparently, Obama was engaged right away, got on the phone on three different occasions with the Israeli leader, Netanyahu. There's no account of how many times he got on the phone with Turkish leaders or with any other leaders. I assume that they did. That was not in the story. But the thrust of Obama's reaction was instantly, how do we help Israel? Don't get me wrong. This is their account, okay? It's not like Obama got on the phone and was like, what the hell did you guys do? Why is there nine dead? Why are there all these people injured? No, got on the phone and said, how can we help? How can we be of assistance in slowing down the investigation, for example? Now, you say, oh, come on, Cenk, you're not being fair. You don't know that Obama said that. Really? Well, they have, as I said, in this article in Foreign Policy magazine, an exact detail of what was in the calls and how Obama would periodically check back in with his boss, I mean, the Israeli prime minister, to see what he needed to do, was ordered to do, I mean, thought that he could do to help. And what he was told, ordered to do, was to water down any investigation in the United Nations. Now, look, you can say, hey, Jake, you don't know. What is it? It's too harsh to say he was ordered to do that. Obama's his own man. America's his own country. He doesn't have to follow it. You're right. Did he follow exactly what the Israeli prime minister told him to do? Yes, he did. In fact, they came out and were quite pleased. Here is the Israeli government spokesperson, Mark Regev. This is a quote on the record. We'd like to express our thanks to the United States that worked behind the scenes to water down the statement at the United Nations. Mission accomplished. Great. Water down the investigation, water down the statement, and the United States is here to help you. Was there any conversation, certainly not on the record, certainly not based on the reporting, any conversation of, what the hell did you guys do? Why did you get us stuck in the middle of a conflict between two important allies, Turkey and Israel? Let alone, why the hell did you kill the people? Let alone, hey, tell me exactly what went down and what you think you did wrong, because obviously we've got a mess on our hands. Even if I'm covering for your ass, I've got a mess on my hands. Why did you give me that mess? That is not to be seen. Thank you very much, sir. What can we do to help you, sir? I mean, you wonder why I get upset that our American government is, you know, being led by the nose by Israel. It's not, there's going to be bias. Where's the bias? You tell me. Okay, is it or isn't it? You show me how it's not. I mean, you got to be mental to think that the U.S. Will stand up to Israel and say, you know, that the president will get on the phone angry and say, how dare you do this? And Obama's like, how do we get the peace process back online? How do we do it? Oh, my God. No. If you were a strong leader, you would get on the phone and say, what you did is totally unacceptable. And don't get me wrong. Get the facts first, of course. Listen to both sides. But on your third goddamn call, couldn't you have said, hey, you know what? What you did was unacceptable. Why don't you now come in with concessions and actually sit down at the peace table and get something done? That's actually an opportunity for you to put pressure on Israel. Remember how much credit I gave to Obama in the beginning and Hillary Clinton? Because it looked like they were actually trying to put pressure on Israel, not to hurt Israel, but to get them to do peace so that it helps Israel. Now, all of that has totally disappeared. Netanyahu came in and showed who was the boss, and it looks like Obama and Clinton bowed their heads. Now they're doing what they're, you know, told to do, and they're running around trying to cover Israel's ass. You show me an article, you show me facts or evidence that shows otherwise, and I'm totally ready to come on here and say it. But that's not what I see now. What I see is fairly pathetic. I mean, it'd be pathetic if we were being led around by the nose by any other country. So it's not just that it's Israel. So why is a foreign country telling us what to do in foreign policy? And we answer their every beck and call unquestioningly. Yesterday I was told that I'm being too absolutist on this. Show me otherwise. Show me otherwise. Show me evidence. Send me articles. Here's where the United States stood up to Israel. And here's where the United States said, all right, look, in this article, there is talk about how, is it possible, did this hurt the United States standing as a neutral arbiter between the Palestinians and Israel? Neutral arbiter? Neutral? On which planet is the United States neutral between the Israelis and the Palestinians? Come on, even if you, love the right-wing government of Israel and you think it can never do anything wrong, no matter what it does, you can't possibly think that the U.S. is just neutral between Israel and Palestine. That they could just come in there and go, oh, well, in an unbiased way, it looks like we should do this in order to get peace.
Not my kind, it's not my time to wonder why everything's all white, everything's gray. Now you're here, now you're away. I don't want this, remember that. I'll never forget where you're at. Don't let the days go by.
I'm not cheering the departure of Helen Thomas, as many Washington reporters appear to be. She was for 50 years the bluntest of White House correspondents, not interested at all in sucking up or throwing softballs or preening before the cameras. She was what reporters are supposed to be, fearless, independent, skeptical. She was tough on Nixon, tough on W., tough on Obama. And now the Washington Press Corps will be even less responsive and more supplicant than ever. Yes, her recent comments were grossly insensitive. To tell Jews that they should get the hell out of Palestine and go back to Germany and Poland was offensive in the extreme after what Jews have suffered there. But did her comments require that she be tarred and feathered and run out on a rail? She quickly and fulsomely apologized for him, as she should have, and other commentators like Pat Buchanan and Rush Limbaugh have said much more outrageous things than she, and they get to keep their day jobs. What's more, she was trying in her clumsy way to point out that Palestinians are still an occupied people. And she was asking the question, is it right that some Jews came from America, as she also said, and now live in the occupied West Bank? Some of these Americans, I might add, are the most bigoted against Arabs. To me, that's an open question, and no one should be fired for asking it in a country and a profession that's supposed to cherish free speech.
Fox News host Chris Wallace and Fox Business analyst Stuart Varney revealed the network's true conservative colors today.
I think it would be the final payment for Helen Thomas if this were to happen, because obviously she was very far to the left wing. No. And if her seat were to be taken by Fox News, it would just be kind of poetic justice.
I was very clearly partisan. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
While Media Matters has repeatedly demonstrated how Fox News is merely an extension of the Republican Party, it is not often the network's own employees will admit it.
And finally, by now, you've probably heard plenty of commentary about Helen Thomas. The veteran White House reporter and columnist resigned abruptly after a video surfaced in which she implored Israel to get out of Palestine, referred to the occupation of Palestinian lands, and suggested that Israelis go back to places like Poland, Germany, and the United States. The comments, of course, received wide play. It's not much worth trying to rescue her words in order to make them sound less offensive. And it goes without saying that other media figures have made grotesque comments advocating violence or advancing bigotry without having to resign. Part of the Thomas spectacle was seeing media figures criticize the frank and critical questions she posed at some White House press conferences. As the June 8th New York Times put it, Thomas persisted in this despite, quote, what many in Washington observe to be the increasingly hostile and outlandish nature of her questions in recent years, close quote. Well, like what exactly? The Times explained that, quote, Ms. Thomas seemed particularly critical of the Iraq war and repeatedly pointed out during White House briefings that the American-led invasion was costing civilian lives, close quote. Now, if that counts as outlandish and hostile to many in Washington, then let's have more of it. Thank you very much. Thomas wasn't without her supporters, including Washington Post columnist Dana Milbank, who praised Thomas's questioning of White House officials over the Afghan war, Wall Street reform, and the like. The fallout extended to a high school in Maryland, where Thomas was scheduled to give a graduation speech. She's been replaced by CBS anchor Bob Schieffer. Now, whatever you think of Thomas's comments, it sure doesn't seem fair to punish those kids like that.
They say you gotta lose a couple fights to win. It's hard to tell from where I'm sitting. They say that this is where the fun begins. I guess it's time that I was quit. A slight figure of speech. I cut my chest wide open. They come and watch us bleed. Is it all like I was hoping? Damn. They said I hope that you will never change. Don't take your business to the big time. I bought us tickets there.
Everyone's talking about last week's tragic incident in the Middle East. And I'm not talking about little Max Werner messing up the Haftorah portion during his bar mitzvah. Yes, Max, everyone noticed. No, I mean the confrontation between Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, and activists aboard a Turkish ship trying to run the blockade of Gaza. It ended with 9 dead and a lot of questions. For more, let's go over to the Colbert Report's Mideast Service Information Center. Yes, the Service Information Center, where debate is never cut off, it's circumcised. Folks, here's the Mideast. Now, some are saying that Israel violated international law by attacking a civilian ship that was carrying food and medical supplies. Others say that Israel was defending a legal blockade which prevents weapons from being smuggled to enemies who are sworn to their destruction. Now, before I weigh in, let me just say, there is no greater friend of the state of Israel than yours truly. Except me. Stephen Colbert. This is Formidable Opponent. Hey, we're not doing Formidable Opponent. Well, we are now. What gives you the right to board my studio without permission? You were about to attack the state of Israel. No, I just said there's no greater friend of the state of Israel than yours truly. Yeah. That's what everybody says right before they attack Israel.
What? Never!
Really? Do you agree with 100% of what Israel did? Well, not 100%. How dare you? You have no right to judge my people after what we've been through. What do you mean, your people? You're not Jewish. How dare you? My grandfather did not die so you could say I'm not Jewish. You're not Jewish. And I happen to know your grandfather is still alive. Right, I said he didn't die. Hi, Peepop. See you at the christening. Stephen, a true friend can point out your faults. Really? Are we friends? Of course. You're fat. I hate you! See? A true friend has your back no matter what. But Stephen, Israel attacked a flotilla of humanitarians. An armada of humanitarianists. That ship could have been smuggling weapons. Remember, in the years before the Israeli blockade, Hamas launched more than 3,000 rockets. Wow. NASA has to cancel the shuttle, but Hamas has a space program? The point is, while it's tragic, you can't make a challah without breaking a few eggs. Not a moist challah, like Peepop's. But this attack handed Israel's enemy video footage they can use to try to make Jews look like bad guys in the eyes of the world. You mean the eyes of America. The Jews lost Europe, what year is this? 2010. About 2010 years ago. Stephen, people died, and that is just bad for Israel. Only if you believe what Israel did was wrong. Well, I guess I do. And you're willing to say that to anyone. Sure. You'd say that to, I don't know, the Israeli ambassador. Bring him on. Okay, Jimmy, bring him on. Please welcome the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren. Holy shtetl. Well, I guess I better go say hi. Have fun. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for coming. Now, sir, what an unexpected pleasure. Now, how much of that did you see?
I heard it all. Every bit.
Fantastic. Right. Now, I just want to say that there is no greater friend of the State of Israel than yours truly.
Thank you.
I even have a cup to prove it. You can have that if you like.
Can I have that?
You can have it, absolutely.
Thank you. I'd like that.
Now, sir.
Yes, Stephen.
Did Israel have to do this? It seems like this was bad for Israel.
Israel had to do it.
Why did they have
Israel
to do it?
Israel had to do it because Gaza is under the control of Hamas. Hamas is not your friendly neighborhood organization. Hamas is a terrorist organization that has sworn to destroy the State of Israel. As you said, it's fired thousands of rockets into Israel. It's kidnapped our young soldier, Gilad Shalit, and held him 4 years in solitary confinement. We don't want to have this blockade, but if we let in the lettuce, what's going to get in is more rockets, machine guns. We try to give the lettuce on the boat.
It goes lettuce, then rockets, machine guns?
Exactly.
This is why I don't eat salads.
Right.
Why can't you actually let in? Today, the Israeli government announced that it was easing the blockade to allow snack food, like potato chips and soft drinks, into Gaza. What made them suddenly less dangerous? Because if you look at America, they seems pretty grim what snack food has done to us.
It's true. Now, listen, Gaza is a hostile entity, all right? The government of Gaza has sworn to destroy us. While we let in 100 truckloads of food and medicine every day, we don't feel particularly obliged to provide them with snack food. We did today, and Hamas rejected our snack food. Our pretzels were not good enough for Hamas.
Now, why not support an international investigation into this incident? Why does Israel have to do it themselves? Why not international observers?
Well, just like American soldiers would not like the Libyans or the North Koreans judging their actions in Afghanistan and Iraq, our people don't want Libyans and North Koreans judging our actions.
Civilians were killed here.
Civilians, unfortunately, can get killed everywhere, but here...
But Americans don't kill civilians. We have smart bombs. We have smart bombs, sir. They arrive at someone's house, ring the doorbell, ask for ID.
Right.
Then if the terrorist identifies themselves, we get the women and children out of the house. We pack up all the breakables, allow the person to make peace with their God, then explode. Then everyone else is resettled someplace pretty.
The people on this particular boat were 70 hired thugs from a radical Islamic organization that had sworn to the state.
But were the women and children also thugs?
Yeah, but they were not killed.
But they could have been killed.
We have encountered many flotillas trying to get through, including five of the six ships in this flotilla. We're all taken without incident, without any casualties whatsoever. It was only on this one ship, which had been taken over by this radical organization, where our guys who came on board expecting to encounter peace activists encountered these people armed with clubs, knives, and apparently guns as well. They were shot, some of our boys, and they had to defend themselves.
Given the situation right now, do you think there is a chance for peace?
I think there's a great chance for peace, and we're willing to take the risk for peace, but as you talked about before about the landmines, we make sure we go down that path to peace, make sure it's not a path lined with landmines.
Now, but before I go, I just want to say that I repudiate what Helen said. She's a friend, but I repudiate everything she said. Go back to Poland. Go back to Germany. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Israel is for Israelis. If anything, the Palestinians should go back to where they came from.
I think...
Do you agree? Do you agree, sir?
I do not agree.
It's time to get them back to wherever that was?
Alas, I don't agree. I think there's room for both of us to share this homeland. Palestinians living in their homeland, Israelis living in their homeland, in a position of permanent and legitimate peace.
Thank you, sir. Ambassador Michael Oren, the Israeli ambassador to the United States. There is no greater friend of the State of Israel than this man.
You can now support this podcast as easily as by shopping online. The next time you need to make a purchase of just about anything, simply visit bestoftheleft.com and use our amazon.com search box to find what you're looking for. The search box is located right on the side of the website. You can't miss it. When you make your purchase, we get a little commission. It's just another effortless, completely free way for you to help keep the show going strong. Thanks for your support.
Please don't put your face into your hands. We could be friends. Please don't put your face into your hands. We could be friends.
Joe Biden has reached a new low. Even though a U.S. citizen was one of the nine people Israeli forces killed on that relief ship to Gaza, the Vice President of the United States defended Israel's assault. Not a peep about the dead U.S. citizen, Furkan Dogan, or the other people Israelis killed. Not a peep about Israel violating international law by commandeering a ship on the open seas. Instead, the usual defense of Israel's actions, no matter how brutal and lawless and indefensible they are. With a response like this, and with Obama's mealy-mouthed response too, there's no use in wondering why the U.S. gets lumped in with Israel in the minds of Arabs and Muslims around the world. The Joint Chiefs have already said out loud what many of us have been saying for years, that Washington's blind support for every Israeli misdeed is a threat to our national security. And yet Obama and Biden keep providing that blind support. The illegal and murderous Israeli attack on the Gaza ship was an easy occasion for Washington to put some distance, finally, between itself and Tel Aviv. But Obama and Biden refused, and so not only does Israel have a black eye on this one, we do too. And we don't have a clear eye left.
Israel update. Andy, the sun may rise, the sun may set, the leaves may bud and fall, but a few things will remain constant in all our lives. The Japanese will always love cartoon monsters, that and unsettling pornography. Two, Kenya will always produce world-class distance runners. And three, Israel will have a tendency to, out of nowhere, do something crazy, incredibly frustrating, and that does nothing to further their image or cause worldwide. And this week was no different from any other week. As you may have heard, 9 people died and 30 were wounded when Israeli troops boarded or stormed a flotilla of ships carrying aid to Gaza. And that last sentence is indicative of what you're dealing with here. Even describing the act is now controversial. No one can even agree on the semantics of the circumstances. The Israelis say they boarded the ship, though, to be fair, I don't think that you can grammatically be described as boarding anything when you're ziplined down from a helicopter with a loaded machine gun. I've never heard a train conductor say, "All aboard!" before diving for cover as some last-minute passengers crashing through the ceiling, opening fire on anything that moves.
Yeah, well, it does seem that the Israeli military have still not quite mastered the arts of public relations. And this, I think, is certain to go down in history as a bit of a blooper, John, whatever the semantics
turn out
to be. It is a gaffe, and I guess, you know, I mean, the problem for Israel is that large parts of the world consider pretty much everything they do to be a bit of a blooper, and some of the angry bits of the world consider their entire existence to be a blooper itself. Right. So I guess they get used to it, and Israel has very much reacted as if to say, oh well, shit happens. Now, admittedly, the Israeli government does seem to often go out of its way to make that shit happen, but still... The T-shirt slogan stands, John.
It's still their go-to follow-up comment.
Yeah.
Both sides quickly released their own heavily edited videos of the event. The Palestinian video showed gunshots and the bleeding bodies of unarmed passengers. The Israeli video showed the soldiers being set upon by baseball bats and metal bar-wielding activists. And stops just before the shooting begins. Both directors, essentially... have their own visions of how the final cut should be, Andy.
Yep.
And what this situation clearly needs is for a major studio like the UN to step in and take the edit away from both sides. Just release something that's commercially viable.
Right.
But one thing is for sure, from both of the videos, you don't want to be anyone in it. I would not want to be on the ship, having Mossad agents raining down on top of me, and I would certainly not want to be an Israeli soldier about to have an angry crowd try to beat the shit out of me. You know, what was in the ships that necessitated this commando raid? Well, they were carrying 10,000 tons of goods, including school supplies, building materials, and two large electricity generators. So, to be fair to the Israelis, Andy, they didn't know that. They didn't know that what was in there. To be fair to the ship in question, they were in international waters. You know, so, but hold on, to be fair to the Israelis, they may have been concerned that there were materials to make weapons in there, but again, to be fair to the ship, they weren't expecting a scene from a bad Steven Seagal movie. So, who's right here? Well, the answer closer to the truth is neither of them are right. You could argue that sailing a flotilla of ships to break the Gaza blockade was a provocative act, sure, but you could also argue that the blockade itself is a a lot more provocative, Andy. I mean, you don't really get much more provocative than being contained in a strip of land without enough food or supplies.
Yeah, but John, this is just typical anti-Israelism you're perpetrating.
Okay.
Because there's a reason for this blockade, John.
All right.
And that is Israel are trying to end the culture of dependency that is holding so many people in Gaza back, just relying on aid. You know, they're helping them to help themselves, to make their own medicine, instead of relying on international donors to make them magically better, to grow their own food on their own patches of bombed-out rubble. You know, if Canada can manage to grow their own food, John, why can't Gaza? You know, and it's tough love.
The Gaza blockade itself is at best a deeply flawed security measure, and at worst, a flagrant trampling over basic human rights. Even UN Chief Ban Ki-moon, Andy, whose very job is to shamefully underreact to every single global event. That's his job. It's in his contract. Even he calls the siege of Gaza counterproductive, unsustainable, and wrong. That's Ban Ki-moon saying that, Andy. That's the equivalent of anyone else saying, holy f*** balls, this is just turbo bullshit.
But see, he said that. He said counterproductive, unsustainable, and wrong. And Netanyahu replied, yeah, well, he would say that. Besides, he's just a secretary, probably just some gossip he overheard at the coffee machine. And anyway, you can't spell counterproductive, unsustainable and wrong without ban. You are a stupid UN c***. there's always to and fro in his arguments, George.
You're right, there's both sides. You have to take the broader perspective. But the more you read about this story, the more you want to slam your head through the newspaper or laptop screen that you're reading it on. Incidentally, that, by the way, if nothing else, is a good argument for the continuation of print journalism. It's a lot cheaper and safer to smash your head through the stories you're reading. But one such frustrating detail here came from Captain Ari Shalakar of the Israeli Defense Forces, who revealed that the commandos began the raids aimed with paintball guns. He said, it's true that the Israeli commander unit came on board with paintball weapons in order to disperse people if there was violence. They were ready for a violent demonstration on board the flotilla, especially on the big boat, the Marmara. No one really expected that there would be such a violent outcome, though, of what happened. Really? How do you expect them to react to having paintballs shot at them? For a start, paintballs really, really hurt, Andy. And also, why would you trust that they were using paintball guns? You just dropped in from f***ing helicopters. They're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt in that situation. It's not like they thought you were a bachelor party that had got lost. Oh, don't worry, it's Dave's last day of innocence. Let him shoot himself out. He went on to say, first, you know, the soldiers tried to disperse, but in the end, when they were shot at, you know, when they were shooting from the other side, there's no other way than turning from paintball to live ammunition. And I'm sure that's true. And what is live ammunition anyway, Andy, than a paintball simply covered in lead with the paint taken out?
Thanks for listening, everyone. So the very first thing I have to say about this episode is that I'm really excited about the type of feedback I might get from it. I have no idea what people will have to say about it. I really don't. But to the best of my knowledge, I've never been called an anti-Semite in my life. And this could be it. This could be the big day. So if that happens, that'll be interesting. Cross that right off the bucket list. And that would be fun. What I want to do, though, is give you my perspective before anyone has a chance to respond. And say that I think I come at this whole issue from kind of a unique perspective of absolute cluelessness. Because, like, I grew up in such a way that for the first couple of decades of my life, I fundamentally could not understand why anyone would be prejudiced against the Jewish people, the Jewish faith, the Jewish race, you know, whatever. I didn't endorse this idea, but obviously, but I could at least understand why people would be prejudiced against other races, you know, with you know, different skin tone, because that's something you can see. That's you know, something that's outwardly different. People like to be around people who are the same as them. Like, I could grasp that. I never understood the dislike of Jews. I just didn't understand it. So that's where I'm coming from. And then growing up, like, you're not going to find a less religious person in the world than me. So for the whole Israel-Palestine, whole Middle East area, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm coming at it from, I don't know what kind of seems right, what's wrong, and so forth. And religion and faith don't enter into my calculations, even a scintilla, not at all. So I've felt this way that I'm about to say in a moment for a long time, maybe forever, I don't know. But it was put into words recently by my brother, so I'll give him credit for saying it. I'm kind of stealing what he said. Is that, you know, kind of in any situation, but then in this particular situation between Israel and Palestine, I'm for the oppressed. You know, I just generally don't take the side of the oppressor. So right now, as things stand, it certainly appears that Israel is the oppressor and the Palestinians are the oppressed. And the point my brother made, which I totally agree with, is that it's not that they're inherently that way. If the roles were reversed and Palestine was put in charge, would things be better? Would the Palestinians be totally fair to the Israelis and they would live in harmony? Probably not. It would probably be completely fucked up in the exact opposite way. Well, in that case, my position would remain the same. I would still be on the side of the oppressed. So whoever's got the short end of the stick, that's who I'm pulling for. So for me, you know, my allegiances really have almost nothing to do with the people themselves or the history of a race or the history of a culture or political ties that we have with people. I'm just, who's doing the right thing? Who's doing the wrong thing? Let's all do the right thing. And I'm on the side of people who want to do what's right and fair and just and so forth. So now that that light topic is out of the way, I wanted to tackle something a little bit heavier. And long-time listeners of the show will recognize a couple of recurring themes in what I'm about to say. And the very quick background on me in this show is I kind of started doing it on accident. You know, I have absolutely no professional experience or any experience of any kind, you know, producing audio, you know, putting shows together, radio, nothing. Like, had absolutely no experience. And in the very, very early days of podcasting, I was listening to these shows and everyone was producing them from their basements and it was really good. And you had the sense like, oh, like if they can do it, anybody can do it. I should do that. And so that I would have that thought all the time. It's like, oh, I should make a show. Oh, wait, no, I'm not talented. That's right. So I guess I can't. And then you take that kind of instinctual feeling I was having, and you combine that with, hey, I'm listening to a lot of great stuff. I wish other people could hear this. I wish I had some way of making sure other people heard this. So there you go. You take those two things. Hey, I should make a podcast, but too bad I'm not talented. And you kind of cross-pollinate that with wanting to share this kind of professional audio with other people. Well, there you go. That's how this show came about. So that's the very first theme is me kind of fundamentally doing this show without really knowing what I'm doing. The second theme is that I'm always late to the game, and usually by like years. And so this right here is where those two themes collide. So I just want to say that it was actually, I just looked at the date. It was actually the 4-year anniversary yesterday from when I'm talking. 4-year anniversary from when I received my first two emails asking me and half complaining about the quality of the audio. And I'm talking about the levels of the audio, a little bit too loud, a little bit too soft, and so forth. 4 years ago, I started receiving emails like that. And I don't get that many, but I get like maybe one or two every 6 months. So the first ones came 4 years ago. The most recent one came May 11th. So last month. And so you see what I'm saying. Obviously, I didn't know what I was doing when I started, and it's taken me 4 years to get my act together. At least I hope I've gotten my act together. So my response for all these years has always been that I've tried everything I know how to try. I don't know how to make it any louder. I don't know why it's quiet. I don't know why this show seems to be the quietest show anybody's ever heard. Everyone always tells me I listen to 20 podcasts and yours is always the quietest. I've never known why that was. And over the past few weeks, I finally got around to asking a professional. You know, I'd done everything I could, and people seemed to be listening, and they didn't seem to complain that much, so I didn't put it at the top of my priority list. But finally, I got the advice of a professional, and he kind of tutored me and did all these things and installed a bunch of bells and whistles and, you know, pumped this up and leveled that out and on and on and on. And he talked about a lot of things that I can't say because I didn't understand what he was saying when he said it, and so forth. So all of this is just to say that this episode that you just listened to is the first one that I would say should actually be a little bit louder, so that, you know, if you're like driving in a car on the freeway, you should actually be able to hear it fairly well. At least that's my hope. I haven't put the show out yet. I don't have any feedback on it. I haven't even heard it myself yet. I'm just hoping that's the case. So I'm just letting you know that's what's supposed to happen. Keep the feedback coming, and we can fine tune it from here. Now that I got a little bit of professional backup, we can probably make it sound real nice for you. So that'll be it for today. I'm going to wrap up. I want to thank the people who have written in to complain about the audio of the show. I want to thank the first people to write in. That was Chris P and Dana H. Wrote in back in June 2006. So the show had been in existence for like 5 months, and people were already getting on me for that. And then the most recent email to come in was from, I want to say Ellie, but it could also be Eli, I'm not sure, wrote in on May 11th. So thanks to those people and everyone in between who finally pressured me enough to seek outside help to get this all settled. Also, of course, I want to thank a couple of members. Joshua H. signed up for his monthly membership back on February 17th and has been sticking with the show ever since. Thank you, Joshua. And Deborah U. signed up for a full year in advance starting back on December 8th of last year. So huge thanks to Deborah and Joshua, all the other members who make the show possible. It certainly makes me feel good that all of you members sleep better at night, secure in the knowledge that you're making this show possible. And for all of you out there listening, please continue to support the show just by simply telling everyone you know about it. It makes a huge difference to just spread the word that way. To stay connected to the show between episodes, you can join us on Facebook and Twitter. I send out messages there. Occasionally, they're interesting. For details on the show, including links to all the sources and all the music used in this and every episode, those are always posted in the show notes on the blog. So, coming to you from far outside the conventional wisdom of Washington, D.C., my name is Jay, and this has been the Best of the Left podcast, coming to you 10 times a month, thanks entirely to the members and donors to the show, from bestoftheleft.com.
Science now black and white. You took apart a picture that wasn't right. Pitch burning on a shiny sheet. The only maker that you wanna meet. A dying man in a living room. Whose shadow paces the floor. He'll take you out any open door. This is not my life. It's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like. It's just a fond farewell to a friend. I couldn't get things right.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.